when you look at the sales team, the product team, the marketing team, they have to sort of lock in their process. They have to know what they're doing, and they need to do that as good as they can. There is room to innovate slightly, but you usually don't want those teams to take too much risk, because you want them to execute the process that's proven, that's going to give results on that point. What the growth team does is they can look at the process to see if what is going on there is actually the right thing that's going on, and then they can implement changes. And that means you're not asking someone to learn a new trick, be it using growth hacking as a new trick now suddenly. You're actually hiring specifically for that skill set and for that mindset of people.
Hello and welcome to another exciting conversation on the VWO podcast. In this episode, Michel Fass and Thierry DeVries talk about strategies to design winning experiments. The experts share practical insights for testing new propositions before fully implementing them. But wait, this episode isn't like your regular podcast. It's a unique webinar turned video podcast, and it is delivered to you in the form of an exclusive masterclass. So don't forget to hit that follow button to stay updated with our latest episodes. With that being said, let's join our experts and learn some interesting experimentation strategies.
Before you start, or even if it is your first pancake, you have the assumption how to do it. Maybe you read the instruction or manual, but at least you have to test the water, get out of the building, experience how it works, just in real life. And that's also how it works with doing experiments. So, and get your learnings there. And that's also a reason why when you're doing your first launch or whatsoever, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't put all your advertising budget in one basket, please. Test the water, do it smartly, do it lean, etc. So far the analogy. Thanks for liberating, Ajit. And why is that? Because we're all mammals here, because we need to maximize learning. I mean, that's in our nature. And by doing that, so it's not only for your existing business, but also for new propositions. So growth is our formula for growth is learning plus optimization. And if you extrapolate that to what learning is experimentation plus measurement, and optimization is more like selections times improvement. So what does work, what doesn't work? Why is that so important, the amount of experiment? It's all to do with, therefore we use this graph, we like this one a lot. I think it's most important to explain this on the X-axis. It's about you're doing the amount of experiments, as you can see when you're right. And on the Y-axis, it's about the return on investment on your experiments. And return on investment doesn't particularly mean how many customers or the amount of turnover you make. It's about the learnings and the insights you gather based on the doing stuff, new stuff, or the optimizing stuff. I think it's most important here, what you see is that the graph is also a negative flow, and that's the gray part. And that's the room where it's important to also get those ones. So inconclusive or failed, or ideally not inconclusive, because we can't draw any results out of that on a statistical level. But the importance is, and that's the cadence you see here, the flow you see here, is that, hey, by doing more experiments more often, you see that you're getting better at this. So the culture and the excitement of doing experiments will grow. And of course, some definitely won't work. And maybe there's like one jackpot there. Hey, and that's when the excitement grows. And the most important thing is what you see in the pink, if it's good to read here, we got approval to take more risks. And this is something we've seen with some of our clients recently, where we had organized a program to do it by themselves, not just us teaching how them to fish and do it for fishing, but teaching them to fish. And they took more risks, also from the product angle, not only on the market angle. And this is the message of this slide, is by taking more risks and have a higher velocity in doing your experiments, you will see an increasingly compounding growth. And I think that's the most important thing we learn here. By learning from each experiment and doing that faster, then you make a real stepping growth in creating more market share and creating more exciting customers, a better user flow, or a better product. Because in the end, you can't growth hack a shitty product, is a bold statement here. So by that it explained. And the gray part, inconclusive or failed, invalidation is a learning tool. For those who is who are familiar with the game Battleship, who played that in his younger days, or maybe still, it's a cool board game, and I do it with my kids. I like it a lot. But the analogy is, in my opinion, one of the best analogies for what growth hacking or doing rapid experimentation really is. You know, you have the assumption that maybe this battleship should be on some coordinates let's say in the coordinates of A and B and 1, 2. But if you hear splash many times instead of boom, then you know that you have to get out there because you're wasting time and money, so to say. So therefore, if things are not working, this is also really important information too. Let's do something on Discord, or let's set up a new type of content or narrative. Hey, there's no attraction whatsoever. And no response. Hey, maybe this doesn't work for this audience or at this time or et cetera, et cetera. I think those learnings are sometimes even as important as the things that work. And invalidations are things maybe that have to take more risks. And we think that is important. So take it away from here.
And because and one addition to that is that because you are testing things, the worst thing is not an invalidation. The worst thing is an inconclusive experiment, which means you have to repeat the same experiment again, which is probably because you didn't change enough, didn't take enough risk, or because you didn't do your research, or your customer simply doesn't care about what you're working on at that point. But it leaves a lot of variables open. But for invalidation, because you're doing experimentation on a small scale, so not necessarily implementing a solution immediately, you're actually reducing the risk that you're going to have in your company by getting invalidated learnings as well. One addition I wanted to make, Jerry.
Yeah, definitely. Please do that. I think it's really relevant. And this is also a nice bridge. In the previous slide, we should all say take more risks. Not only focus on one point in the funnel, for example, but also make it more complete funnel or a certain stage of the funnel or include product in it. So how do you do that? Therefore, you have to build a culture for growth. Where learning is cool and failing fail fast. We know all the cliches from most successful scale-ups or the IPO, etc. But it's about failing fast. And it's not about this. Please. Hey, we need to do something innovative that no brand has ever done anything like it. Whoa, super risky. Can you give examples of other brands that have done this? I mean, say it's silly joke here. And
voices.
My voices here. Yeah, something. These things happen on occasion. But the thing is, this is what we see so many times. I said at the beginning, we work for bold corporates. And this is something we see a lot with larger SMEs and corporates. And even scale ups who have the potential to become much more politics, etc. And where's the energy, the starting point of the company, where everybody took risks and had the excitement to explore? And how do you keep that into your culture? Or maybe you love him, maybe you hate him, or his company. But one thing Amazon did really, it's really disciplined in, that's that they are like, to have a culture for growth. As you can read here, the success there is the function of is a function of how many experiments we do per month, per week, and per day. Being wrong might hurt you a bit, but being slow will kill you. Well, amen to that. So we have some short introduction on what is a growth culture, with some pros and cons. Then we skip the what does your tool your team look like. But we will focus on the mindset shortly, and then Michelle will take it there with the process. But please feel free to elaborate, Michelle, because you work with a lot of teams, you have a lot of examples or experiences with teams. But what is a growth culture? These are the basic ingredients, if you ask us. Rule number one, build a culture for growth. that there is the possibility to learn and to what we just what I read out loud from Mr. Bezos. So, and therefore you need buy-in of the team and your management. There should be a tolerance for insecurity, access to your data. I think this is a really blocker, Michel, what we see a lot with companies. Hey, of course, yeah, we were like data-driven. Yeah, bring in all the tools. Yee-hee. But, oh, by the way, Roblox, and this is so frustrating. Maybe this is familiar to some of you. But if you want to really learn, make it accessible. Isn't it, Michel?
Yeah, exactly like that. It's the access to data is often fragmented, which is a large issue because you often have marketing teams. They have their Google Analytics. You have product teams who sometimes have Mixpanel or something built by themselves to track everything. And then sales has their CRM. But the question in the end becomes, if you are working on growth in the company, do you really want to force yourself to be stuck on marketing metrics, for example? Don't you much rather look at how well those leads that you're bringing in are actually also converting into customers, and if they're staying a customer, which is the reason why we want that access to data to be free of barriers of teams and more accessible throughout the company and across the entire journey. One thing that I think is really important on this list as well, often the most important, that's the buy-in of the team and the management, actually. We see the cartoon that Cherry has shown, we see that it happens, and it doesn't happen sometimes, it happens a lot. So teams express that they want to do something, but when they have to do it, they go to their management, they talk about it, and in the end, they don't get the approval, so they can't really get to experimenting with the things they want to experiment on. Now, what you really need here is almost a sponsor from the management team that is going to support the growth team in that sense as well. So that's something to take into account if you're just setting up a growth team or if you want to set up a growth team.
Definitely, yeah. And therefore, it's really important that if you need that buy-in, always start with a thorough strategy where you, of course, include C-level or other important buy-in. And then create with them together your objectives or OKRs, as we prefer, to have a really clear horizon where the experiment should be about. And don't put the horse behind the car. What is the expression again? Don't start the experiment without a strategy or clear objectives, because then it's your owl all over there. It's people see a tactic. Hey, we should test that. Hey, that's cool. But is it really relevant? Is it now, here, or there? Or at least just put it on your backlog. So we'll take it into account later on. But don't get excited or to fall in love too soon with a certain tactic, what should be your big bang. But those silver bullets, they don't exist anymore. That's your something from the past. But then, if you follow this sequence, really important, by doing experiments based on objectives, select the right tooling, which should be taken into account, also really important, and then collect your learnings, and then see if there's are you there, validated, invalidated, or even go back to the drawing table, as you see the line here, which goes back to strategy. Next, what does your growth theme look like? Well, most important is they should be as interdisciplinary as possible. We divided three of them. First one is the low thresholds. Mostly we see that as structured as a matrix organization, where ideally the team exists of people from data, sales, marketing, product, supported by a head of growth. And what we see in these kinds of organizations, the following cons, lack of focus.
If I can make one addition to that, Cherry. On the last slide, what it means to be a matrix organization means that the teams are existing. So you have a marketing team, a sales team, a product team, maybe some data people running around. And you basically say, now I want everyone on there to spend an X amount of time on growth hacking. So people, you basically give them an additional responsibility here in the low threshold option. Just wanted to add to that.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. So what we see that the cons in these kinds of organizations, lack of focus, not top of mind. Hey, day-to-day business. I have to keep my score, my targets, etc., etc. So leads versus learnings. And performance is measured differently. Michel, could you elaborate on this part?
Yeah, for sure. So we are working with some people who have a team like this, and they often don't finish their experiments on time. And when you ask them why, it's, yeah, my day-to-day business is too much. There's too much business going on that we have to take care of. We have targets. We have a marketing manager that's pushing on us to do something or to achieve something. So growth is an extra that I only do when I have time for it. But what you often see is if you do it only when you have time for it, you're never going to have time for it. So you need to be pushing yourselves, freeing up your team, really freeing up your team here in order to make this structure work. And one of the things to look into here, it's the lead versus learnings, and the performance is measured differently. Important thing here is if you work with a team like this, you set up different targets for example, a marketing team in total, but the marketer that's working with the growth team has to do something that's different than the target from the marketing team. So for example, the amount of conclusive and inconclusive experiments run, or another metric of growth that they're going to be made accountable for. So it's important here, if you take them out of their day-to-day, to actually really take them out of it. They can't do it at the same time. You have to take them out so they can do it on scheduled amounts of time.
So, but on the other hand, the pros is it's easy to set up. No extra resources besides that of growth. And yeah, we call it the free trial of growth. It's the easiest way to set it up to start.
Yeah.
Then if you go to a more complex structure, this is a structure where growth is within departments that we see, especially when people are growing and they have a really understanding of what their verticals all are about. They have established teams for each part of the R funnel, from awareness, acquisition, activation, retention, referral, and revenue. That's the abbreviation about, if you're not familiar with this one. But what we see there as the pitfalls is it is a really high investment and many resources. You need for each vertical, you need teams or specialists or whatsoever. And it's a risk that teams don't share each other learnings. That's something we should really focus just on one part because this is our responsibility instead of tunnel versus funnel vision, we call this. Maybe you should set up certain parts of the funnel and therefore not only focus on your awareness part or retention whatsoever. That can be a blocker for the other verticals. Would you like to add something here, Michel?
Yeah, you usually see this. You actually often see this in a lot of high growth scale-ups right now. So when you look at Miro, for example, Miro has several growth teams that are working on parts of the product or parts of the funnel. I don't know how they do it exactly, of course, but I think the challenge in the end is sharing learnings among teams. Because one of the risks you have here, even if you create a growth team for marketing, top of funnel and bottom of funnel, for example, is that they sometimes do the same experiments. And that's such a waste of time because one of the teams has already learned something about it. You have to communicate that with the other team. Another con you could see here, which is good in a way, but it can be bad, is that teams can get sort of competitive with each other if it's not done correctly, which means that they're going to hold back their information and they don't want to share it.
Yeah.
But you're going to the post now. Yeah.
Yeah. On the other hand, there is more focus and regarding to the slide of the compounding effect, you can easily create a compounding effect by doing so.
Yeah, I think if you do this correctly, this method, this is the highest speed of growth. I'm not going to say highest ROI, but if you want to learn fast, this is the way to go really, really fast.
Yeah, true story. And last in this this list is the most complex. It's the dedicated growth team who are fully focused. Pitfalls here or challenges should be embed learnings within the organization. That's not some, these things lack it, right, Michel?
Yeah, what you're basically doing here as well is by having one growth team separate, it's sort of more complex than the one before, because if you do the one before, there's more buy-in and your company becomes a growth company instead of just having a growth team in there. But here you have a growth team that looks across all the departments that are on there. They look at sales, marketing, and product, and they think, yeah, it's the same. It's part of the same funnel. But what this also means is that the sales, marketing, and product team are still separate from the growth team, which means that if the growth team learns something and they ask the marketing team, for example, to implement their learnings, the marketing teams generally don't like it too much. So the high risk to resistance, it's very much there. Same goes for product teams. They often have their backlogs for a quarter or half a year, and they've locked it in for, say, 90% of their time almost. If you come to them and you say, yeah, we learned something, this needs to change, this has priority because we see it could drive 10% growth in our company, they don't like it because they have their own plan and you're there interfering with the things they actually want to do. So that's something to take into account here, but there are some benefits.
Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah, take it alone, Michel. Now you're on.
Yeah, sure. So when you take the growth team out of the individual departments, you're actually creating a different profile within your company, which means a growth person has to think a little bit differently than execution people do. And what I mean with this is execution, when you look at the sales team, the product team, the marketing team, they have to sort of lock in their process. They have to know what they're doing and they need to do that as good as they can. There is room to innovate slightly, but you usually don't want those teams to take too much risk because you want them to execute the process that's proven, that's there, that's going to give results on that point. What the growth team does is they can look at the process to see if what is going on there is actually the right thing that's going on, and then they can implement changes. And that means you're not asking someone to learn a new trick, be it using growth hacking as a new trick now suddenly. You're actually hiring specifically for that skill set and for that mindset of people. Now, this team can also act autonomous from the other teams, which means they can set up their own experiments. They don't drag resources away from your daily business. And because of this dedication, they can focus on getting the most results from their time. Like I said before, I think the highest growth potential is the second option we mentioned, where you have a growth team per vertical. But that's really expensive. You need to change your business entirely. This is a way how you can do it without changing your complete internal structure in your company right away. And I think this is the next step you can take if you're starting out with an interdisciplinary team where people are working together sometimes. There are some learning goals that you're starting out with, and goals are what is going to determine your experiment funnel, your experiment process. Now, you often have learning goals from targets. You sometimes have learning goals from observations, and sometimes you have goals that are just given to you, like management says, hey, this is bad. We need to do something about this. Now you can do it. Whichever one you have is going to change the process a little bit afterward, but what's always happening are these 10 steps. So from your goals, you go into your preparation. You're looking at your experiment to see what do we actually need to do? What are we going to need? From there on, you hypothesize, okay, this is what we need to learn. Let's say if we need to learn how to get more customers through a landing page, then a hypothesis could be if we change the headline a little bit, we're going to get more customers from that landing page. You're looking at the current situation as well to see what are the things that are actually going poorly there. And you're going to look at your metrics and see which metrics are the most important for you at that stage. Once you have those clear, you can start designing your experiment, which means you're going to create your different variations. You're going to finish off the experiment in setup so you can go live with it. And keep in mind here to always take screenshots of the before situation and the after situation and variants.
Really that you've
set. Yeah. When we go back to the buy-in from management from earlier on, this is a picture means more to people than data, which is not fair because I believe data shows you the truth. But if you add pictures to that, then suddenly you can deliver a story instead of just, oh, we upped this with this percent, which doesn't mean that much to a lot of people. So yeah. You go live, you get your results, and from the results, you try to extrapolate learnings from that. Now, if something worked, you always want to know why. So you could also ask customers at that point, why did you do this? Or why do you think this is better? Or why do you think that? And from there on, you decide your new actions, which are going to feed either into new goals that you have for learning or into a new experiment hypothesis if you need to repeat the experiment in a different setting. Yeah, we have a B2B example here. We are working with an IT company. Right now they are, selling devices to other companies, but they want to change it. They want to start selling services and not just products. So what that means is giving devices as a service or leasing devices or taking care of security or software, stuff like that. So from that customer request, the customer said, we need a new website to do this. Now for the next slide, you can see, okay, the goals here, we want to give shape to a new proposition, which is for services that's new for them. We want to develop a website so they can start generating leads. And we need to validate the business model in the shape that we placed it. So if we give shape to a proposition, you need to test it. You don't just build everything in entirety and say this is always going to work. We set up an hypothesis with some assumptions in there. The hypothesis from the customer was through a new website, we are able to test with our clients how we should launch a service-based proposition. Now, the assumptions here, there's one really big one, and that's a lot of people do this. They say, we need a new website. If you're looking very critically at it, do you need a new website to test your new proposition? Not always. So that's an interesting question to always keep in mind. Other than that, our target audience wants us to also supply them with IT services, which means they want to swap and they're good with it. If they're dependent on us for both the device and the service and it's going to provide additional value. And the assumption, we're going to test some angles. We probably know which ones are the correct ones to talk to them with.
Yeah.
So moving one step beyond this, we define some actions. We have, we're an agency, we have customer needs and we have decisions to make. We're going to build the core of the new website, which means we're not going to build 50 pages and all the blog content and everything like that. We're going to build what was needed in order to get the website live and to test the proposition. We're going to add 3 landing pages to that to test 3 different angles we have in mind. We're going to create advertisements leading to these pages and some channels, Google and LinkedIn in this case. Google will be for the pull marketing approach, which is also a test for keywords and SEO moving on from there. With LinkedIn ads, we can test different creatives because we can combine it with visuals to test the tone of voice and see how the push marketing approach is going to differ from the pull marketing approach.
Yeah.
So moving on to the next slide, you can see the structure of how that looks. So we have this as our experiment design overview, which is 3 landing pages and different ways of getting people on there. For LinkedIn, we chose the angle of easy versus engaged, which means with easy, we take care of it for you. And with engaged, it's more like, okay, we will take care with you. So your job becomes easier and you have to do something at that point still. So moving on to the next one, here are some very quick examples. We made some landing pages, we made screenshots of the wireframes there. There are some Dutch language in here, but it's a basic, according to best practice, landing page. And if we move to the next one, you're going to see some of the Google ads we set up. So we had actually 6 different types of campaigns. We also tried dynamic search. I'm not going too deep into marketing tactics, but the difference is that normally you have to say which keywords to search for. And with dynamic search, Google looks at your page to decide the best keywords for you as well. Now, if we look at the results from this, there are some question marks, some check marks, and some stop signs. Thank you for fixing the typo, Jerry. So on the first landing page, we didn't get that many sessions. Keep in mind, this is a company with not a too large market. So we tried to experiment with small numbers to see what's happening. But we did see that product first and service first, people are actually spending time on the page. They're engaging with the page. They're scrolling down. they're doing stuff on there. When you compare that to the combination we tried with product and services at the same time, it didn't work that well at all. Most people clicked away and we didn't get a lot of volume on there as well. So we decided for now, doesn't mean it will not never work, but we decided for now, if we move to another experiment, we're going to focus on product and service first. With product first, we saw much better returns on Google Ads, and with service first, we saw much better returns with LinkedIn Ads. Now, we also saw that the LinkedIn Ads for Ease worked better than the Engage, which means in a follow-up experiment, we're going to see if we can improve the landing pages. We're going to see if we can improve the Google Ads for the product first proposition. And we're going to see if we can improve the LinkedIn Ads for the service first proposition that we're setting up. Dynamic didn't perform at all, and that's due to low search volumes. So you can't always take that into control when you look at Google. If you look at the learnings from this, like I just said, products first, it has potential through Google, but it needs improvement. So what we saw was the cost of acquisition was still pretty high. And there's a large risk of drawing in consumer traffic because it's a business-to-business company. If I'm looking for a new phone, I'm going to look at it on my own. I might use the same keywords as a company that's looking for new phones for their employee are going to use. So there is a risk there of drawing in consumer traffic. We have to find some ways to sort of filter them out so we don't have to pay for that type of keywords. The service first does all right through LinkedIn. I said all right because it performs slightly above benchmark, but I usually want to go above that. LinkedIn has a benchmark of between 0.3 and 0.5 click-through rate. We were on 0.51 or something, so it's nothing too special yet. Want to improve that. The combination performs poorly on all channels. There's low volume on search. We're going to drop this focus for now. Like I said, for now doesn't mean it will never work. There are no conversions yet. So after gathering data, we decided to double the budget. That's running right now. And our next step that we're working on as well is to lower the threshold of people signing up, which means we could probably create a lead magnet in order to get them involved more and for them to leave their data. It's a softer conversion that might draw in new leads. Now, this is something in the decision-making process of which experiment to do. If you're seeing really low conversion rates on your landing page, there's often two reasons why that could happen. Your user interface is poor, and your user doesn't understand what they need to do. Your proposition is not working, not resonating with the customer at that point, in which case you're going to have to change the way you're shaping your proposition. And other than that, the thresholds of doing something might be too high, which means the proposition might be interesting, but not interesting enough to sign up for a demo. They might want a free trial, or they might want a lead magnet or a white paper at that time. Dynamic search didn't perform. We need to find out why and set up the new experiment for that. So that's a quick overview of doing a business-to-business experiment. One of the key takeaways here for you when you set up experiments is that experiments in isolation are really hard to do. Now, you could improve a landing page. That's how you can use VWO to change only the landing page. But if you're creating something new, always keep in mind you have to send traffic to that. And the traffic needs to be relevant, which means your experiment is becoming larger and larger with every step, every complexity that's in there that you have to measure both separately so you can see if the channels are performing well, but also in its entirety to see if the entire funnel is performing.
Thank you, Michelin Theory, for sharing these wonderful insights. And thank you, folks, for sticking with us throughout this episode. Now, it's your turn to take action. Implement these game-changing strategies and let us know what impact it had on your business. Also, share this episode with anyone who could benefit from these insights. And don't forget to check out the other fascinating conversations that we've had with industry experts. Before you go, make sure to hit that follow button so that you don't miss a single episode of VWO Podcast. That's a wrap from our side. Until next time, goodbye, take care, and always be testing.